Good evening and welcome, dear friends. The Christ candle is lit for us as a symbol of the light that pervades the world, ourselves, and everything in it. So we gather this evening with a shared intention and directed attention to place ourselves under the canopy of the conscious circle of humanity, the influences that are streaming down to us at every moment, particularly this evening. So today we're in the 50 days of Easter and approaching the close of the season of Easter as we draw near to Pentecost, which is the culmination of the season of Easter. And Thomas Keating says it's the culmination of the entire liturgical calendar. For it commemorates the abundance of God's love, the divine love, and attests to it that God is in everything and everything is in God. Father Thomas goes on to say that to live in the Spirit is the fulfillment of every law, every commandment, the sum of every duty to each other, and the culmination of all of our work. So the joy of oneness is what realization is all about. It is interesting to note that Burl Pogson, speaking of Pentecost in another way, in terms of the work, says the significance of Pentecost is that through being together at Pentecost, the disciples were given to know their aim, and they were able to connect with a force to carry out their task. Before that, as we know from reading scripture, they were fragmented and doubting and somewhat lost at times. But after Pentecost, something happened. In other words, there was a transmission of grace so intense, so filled with force, that it accrues to us as well. Also, interestingly, is that the first known painting of Pentecost, which was done in the 6th century CE, has Mary standing in the middle of the apostles and receiving the Spirit. She was at the center. This was the first painting of many that depicts Pentecost with Mary in the middle. So our reading this evening, our opening reflection, actually comes for a couple of lines in the Gospel of John and one from the Gospel of Matthew. This is why the Father loves me, because I lay down my life in order to take it up again. No one takes it from me. I lay it down on my own. I have power to lay it down and power to take it up again. And behold, I am with you always, until the end of the age. And so it is. Amen. So now we prepare ourselves consciously, intentionally, to enter into a place of stillness and spaciousness, a place of imminent trust and receptivity to the highest influences, the power, the Spirit that is with us and always available to us. But somehow mysteriously more realizable when we're together in community, and we know this as a group. We do not think about it, We simply are aware. And so we prepare ourselves with back upright and heart open, mind in directed attention. We breathe together. We breathe in the same breath that Christ gave to the disciples in that upper room. And we breathe in every most hidden part of our being. Everything. Everything. Everything that is hurt. Everything that seems dark, harsh, shameful, maimed, ugly, irreparably damaged, unforgiving, and unforgivable, wounded, resistant. Everything. We hold it as an offering. We lift it up. Allow it to be transubstantiated in our being as whole, as lovely, as radiant in light. We do this on behalf of everyone and everything. And we breathe out this healing light into our world. We hand over the complexities of this day and the plans for tomorrow. And the anxieties and small fears of our hearts, knowing that they are known. We too lay down our lives and yield to the divine human life. And we stand unencumbered before God and one another in this place of spaciousness and stillness. We enter into Lectio Divina. With the passage from today's reading, today's message. Two people went up to the temple to pray. One was a Pharisee and the other was a tax collector. The Pharisee took up his position and spoke this prayer to himself. O God, I thank you that I am not like the rest of humanity, greedy, dishonest, adulterous, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week and I pay tithes on my whole income. But the tax collector stood off at a distance and would not even raise his eyes to heaven, but beat his breast and prayed, O God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I tell you, the latter went home justified, not the former. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and the one who humbles himself will be exalted. When you have been liberated, you are in a space both empty of self and full of God. Two people went up to the temple to pray. One was a Pharisee and the other was a tax collector. The Pharisee took up his position and spoke this prayer to himself. O God, I thank you that I am not like the rest of humanity, greedy, dishonest, adulterous, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week and I pay tithes on my whole income. But the tax collector stood off at a distance and would not even raise his eyes to heaven, but beat his breast and prayed, O God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I tell you, the latter went home justified, not the former. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and the one who humbles himself will be exalted. When you have been liberated, you are in a space both empty of self and full of God. Two people went up to the temple to pray. One was a Pharisee and the other was a tax collector. The Pharisee took up his position and spoke this prayer to himself. O God, I thank you that I am not like the rest of humanity, greedy, dishonest, adulterous, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week and I pay tithes on my whole income. But the tax collector stood off at a distance and would not even raise his eyes to heaven and beat his breast and prayed, O God, be merciful to me, a sinner. I tell you, the latter went home justified, not the former. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and the one who humbles himself will be exalted. When you have been liberated, you are in a space both empty of self and full of God. Amen. So you're now invited to give us the gift that you received from this passage, or perhaps from gazing upon the image, what was revealed to you. Mark.
Do double duty here. I was really glad for the that last phrase, because it's very hard for me to not hear the gospel reading up to that point as good or bad. You know, one is good, one is bad. But the last phrase really highlights that God is trying to enter both the Pharisee and the tax collector. It's all about how much space is given for God to enter. And that takes away the dualistic nature of how my brain wants to hear it.
Very good, Mark. Thank you for that. Thank you. Pamela or Michael?
I was gazing at that image and bringing it up against your whole intro to our prayer time. And the fact that Pentecost is the full realization that God is in all and all is in God. And that was my work, gazing at that image, is really that. It took squinting my eyes, which is one of the things my art teacher taught me, is to squint to see kind of the essence of shapes and colors. And that removed the veneer of things and brought things to their essence. And then it became clearer. And it also helped that the image was cropped in a circle, which to me is such a symbol of wholeness and completeness. But that's, it just informs me that that's my ongoing work, to see God in all in God.
Indeed, Pamela, thank you. Deborah Jean, it's good to see you here with us.
It's wonderful to be here, Marianne. Good to see you. I love art that is whimsical and powerful. I love art like that. And that image spoke to me deeply. First, it was like a self-portrait of all my little eyes running around. Yes. There I am in all our many glories. And I love the tower with the blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
Which is mostly what comes out of my mouth when I'm in false self, right? And I love the stilts, just that powerful image of putting ourselves up and being more than we are. And of course, the first place at the top. And, you know, it just, whenever in my life, I've been exalting myself. A fall is near, I promise you. And if I don't get the knock on the head, God does a body slam on the floor. It's just, you know, he keeps trying. And when I'm able to be still and allow that loving presence to lead and to follow as I'm able, and you know, in various abilities at any given time, that grace just fills me. I love that image. Thank you for sharing that image.
Yes. It's an example about working with delight by looking at that image. Yes, indeed. Thank you. Thank you, Deborah Jean. One of the things I heard for the first time is the Pharisee's prayer was said to himself. I'm not sure that I ever heard that before, but it was just a reminder that much of that depicted in the image actually occurs in my own mind and in my own thoughts rather than being outside. So I was reminded of Dr. Nichols' admonition for silence of self in the face of our seemingly accomplishments. Anyone else care to share? Ken, please.
Hi, Miriam. I heard he stood off at a distance. And to me, the image that came was one of inner separation, where he had a wider angle view, so to speak, and he could see the Pharisee in his view, and he could see himself in that view. And the image, the circle is like a lens, you know, where you're also looking through a lens and you're off at a distance. Mm-hmm. And you can also see, like, at the same time, the craziness of that scene that goes on in yourself and in the world and the beauty of it as well. Mm-hmm. So I resonate with the tax collector and his seeing all that, and it brings you to a level of compassion.
Indeed. Thank you. Thank you, Ken. Someone else. I know someone else heard something. Nancy, please.
What I heard was that both the Pharisee and the tax collector displayed what they were feeling in their bodies. So the Pharisee took up his position. And so sometimes I think we think about pride and vanity as being internal, but there's this external way we come off. And also this beating of his breast and raising, or not even raising, his eyes. And so it just reminded me about how I might fool myself, but I won't fool others because they will see that in my body.
Indeed. Thank you for that, Nancy. Thank you. So either Don or Deborah.
It's me. I heard empty of self and full of God, and it just felt like the most powerful aim one could have is to be empty of self and full of God. And that was my prayer as we went into that movement of the Lectio, was to be empty of self and full of God.
May it be so, Deborah. Thank you. And thank you, everyone, for these reflections of your hearts and your sharings and all of your being. So now it is my pleasure to introduce and to welcome Donald Janung, who will accompany us on our journey of sharings and discoveries about the passions. Donald.
Good evening, everyone, and good evening to have some fun with the work. Certainly with pride and vanity, we'll have a lot of opportunities to look at how we've observed those in our lives and enjoy a little bit of humor with that, I'm sure. But first, let's pick up with where we left off last week and talk about our homework for this week. And the homework was to self-observe or remember in your time body and experience of lust or greed, what thoughts were evoked, what sensations, what emotions. And if experiencing lust or greed, employ the practical exercises and then come away with what did you observe without story or personal details and with appropriate boundaries. Consider sharing your observations. And this was the next two slides are really going to give us a highlight of what the exercises were that went along with the homework. Intellectually, engage the mind by changing what you're thinking about. We can usually only think about one thing at a time. So the first line of defense, before one is fully snagged into the emotion or passion, is to change the focus of your attention intellectually. Think about something different. Feed yourself different impressions. Similarly, make efforts to avoid the influences, situations, events, and habits that trigger those thoughts. Memorizing a meaningful passage of scripture or wisdom teaching to call to mind in moments of temptation is also very helpful. The next exercise to work with is physically move your body. Breathe and movement, breath and movement help to channel the energy in different ways. Move away from any source of temptation. Turn off the TV, the computer, or simply walk away from something that triggers lust or greed. And the final two, emotionally engage the will in a new way. The classic universal remedy for dealing with the energies of lust and greed is to practice some form of abstinence, chastity, and humility. Interestingly, the first Christian monks realized that fasting from food helped to control other passions. Monks discovered that they didn't struggle so much with lust or greed when they were hungry, only when they were well fed. In addition, the energy of sex center is fundamentally the energy of creation. Engage in creative activities like art and craft, photography, cooking, writing, coloring, sewing, knitting, woodworking, aesthetic and creative pursuits that engage the emotional part of the emotional center. And finally, another option is to shift your attention off yourself, but to someone else, such as giving to others in need, or visiting the sick, or feeding the homeless. So that's what the exercise looked like for the week. And invite you now to share some of the experiences that you had with this homework during the week. Esther, thank you for leading us off.
Hi, Donald.
Good evening.
I was struggling with the tasks that were listed in the last email. And I think that the reason I was struggling, or I am struggling, is because it seems so dualistic to me. You do one thing to compensate for the other. And I feel like if you do one thing, you'll always be dualistic. You got to do one thing. And it's like a struggle all the time. And I wanted to find out, well, first of all, I think these are emotional sufferings that we're addressing, right? Because these are passions that comes from emotional suffering. So I wanted to see if there are root causes. The only thing I can think of it is because we have misidentified who we really are. So I'm wondering if rather than if you're suffering from, let's say, anger, rather than thinking of something less angry or do something positive, how about looking into who is angry? Look for that I that is angry. And I'm wondering if we really looked at ourselves, the angry parts are all one of the eyes that we're looking at. And if we can address it and recognize, I'm wondering if we could really truly sit with that and find the true I that is beneath, above, somewhere that is who we are, and we don't have to suffer from these passions.
Yeah.
Those are my thoughts.
Yeah, good. Let's stay with that for just a little bit, because that's really good. It reminds me of landing on chance or community chest in the game of Monopoly and going right past go and collecting your $200 without having to stop along the way. And that's really wonderful if we can go right to self-remembering. But let's take it from the point of view that if we have not sufficiently observed the passions or observed the eyes, if we've not established that relationship with them by virtue of our own self-study, how difficult it would be to separate from something that we haven't really had that relationship with yet. So the exercise for the week was really for us to shift centers. When you're in the heat, you used anger as one, and that's a really great one. We'll be working with that more next week. When I'm angry, it is darn near impossible for me to go right to go. I am in the throes of that energy, and that energy is so broad and encompassing in me that it is so difficult at that time to do the practice, the basic fundamental practices of a complete observation, and then stepping back away from it with non-identification. And during those times, it is so helpful to shift centers and actually get something. Let's triage the bleeding. Let's try to move away from that energy intentionally, which is a very intelligent way to work, to experience something different, so we can kind of close off that bleeding for the time, so that there is space enough that I can then revisit it and begin to look at its root causes. And of course, we're going to find our root causes, especially when it comes to greed and lust, are going to be our enculturation, the influences that we were raised under, are going to be the root causes of a wrong education, and then other energies develop with those. And then they begin to act out. So I definitely get your sense of what you're saying. And from my point of view, if I can go right to self-remembering, I don't want to stop along the way. Let's go to the Holy Land. However, if I am prone to those energies of lust and greed, that means I've got some work to do there. I've got some relationship building to see, oh, where is it coming from? What are my thoughts when this is happening? What's my emotional experience when this is happening? Physically, when the greed or lust are active in me, what does it feel like in my body? I've got to come to know those so that I can separate from them. And that's why it's so important to do what you what you said looks like dualistic thinking, you know, going from side to side. And you can see, yeah, the pendulum is going to switch. And it's just, you know, the pendulum's going to come and go, and we'll be back there again. But if we get back there again and it feels familiar to us, we know the I. It is going to be so much quicker and efficient in the work to say, oh, there you are, old friend. It's a lustful thought. Okay, thank you. This is not I, and I can move right to who I really am.
Well, thank you. And then, you know, just a quick parting comment is that whenever I suffer from these passions, it to me, it's a warning sign that I have put my hand on burning stove. So get it off.
Yes.
And then realize, oh my God, I'm burning. Why? Because I have mistaken myself for these little eyes.
That's right.
Move on. So this is what I think is really important to do, centering prayers and meditations to gain that space between action and reaction, or reactivity. So anyway, so thank you.
That's perfect. Let's add one more component on there, something that I find for myself that's so helpful. And that is when we're dealing with these big passions, these high energy passions, for me, they just don't come on. They're gradual. There's little things that build up. So when lust starts coming in, it's like some impression, there was an impression on television and I gave my attention to it for a little bit too long and got connected with it. And maybe I broke away from it. Okay, good. I'm on to the next thing. And that impression's not there. If I haven't dealt with that, if I haven't recognized, oh, did you see where you started to go with that? It's these little things that build up to the point where I'm burning my hand on the stove. The heat was there. I didn't do the little work along the way that got me to the big passion experience.
Yeah, inner separation would be great, right?
Yes. Yeah. That's for all of us. It is a little, the work talks about the little things. The little things are so important. I think it was several weeks ago, one of the presenters talked about a black belt being simply meaning you've mastered the basics. That's all it means. You've mastered the basics. It's time to really begin to learn your art. So this is important that we work with these little things, but now we're dealing with these big passions, and the exercise was really quite wise for us to shift centers and get out, you know, get someplace else within ourselves. But then there's work to do post facto when we are in that place, and I can come back and retrospect and I can work.
Yeah.
Astra, yeah. I enjoyed our engagement. Thank you as always.
Thank
you. Gay. Hello, Gay.
Hi. Thank you, Donald. I wanted to share something that came to me this week when I first read the email about greed and lust. I began to think about how those feel in the body. I will say that those energies, and they're simply energies as far as I can tell, you know, in my younger days, decades ago, they could be quite intense bodily. Those bodily sensations have considerably gentled down, I would say, but during COVID, during this year and some months, I began to observe something that I really had not ever noticed before. And that is, as far as I can see, greed and lust both have in common. There is something that I want that's outside of me that I feel is going to complete me in some way. It's going to make me happy, make me calmer, make me whatever. But it's that something outside that I need to attain or get. So here's what I noticed during COVID. I lived by myself, and there were days and days that went by that I didn't see another human being, that I didn't leave my house. And I would notice these, this energy that would come up. It wanted to go to HEB so badly. It needed something at HEB, or it needed something at Home Depot, or Costco, or Kohl's. And I never noticed before that I was calming those energies by being able to get in my car and go get that dozen eggs that I needed to make whatever. So there was there was some frustration. And that's when I began to notice it. So it was such a gift to be able to see how I had distracted myself by the ability with my car and my credit card to go get whatever little thing it was that I thought was going to do something. I don't know what. I would say that when I began to see it clearly, I recognized it as a gift. And I also recognized what I did was to substitute gratitude for the first time in my life to have time, this hours of time that I could do, if I want to use the word do or not do, whatever it was. So that was such a gift to me. Mm-hmm. And now I'm beginning to see the restrictions are letting up. I'm now getting, I can go get in my car whenever I want to. My prayer is that I can remember that feeling, that energy, that impulse that wants to satisfy itself in some way with something outside, whether it is buying something or doing something. Thanks. That's it.
Yeah. That's good. Thank you, Gay. Yeah. I certainly could resonate with what you just said. And it also reminded me of the challenges and why the fourth way is so difficult. COVID kind of did shelter us in. It kind of contained us as if we were restricted by monastery walls. And couldn't go out quite like we used to. And so we had a lot of opportunity to observe different energies in us, very much in a monastic way, and how good it was to be able to get outside of the walls and experience a little bit of relief from that, but at the same time observing what it was that wanted to be outside of the walls and all the energies that go along with that. So, thanks so much for that, Gay. Leslie.
Hi.
Hello, Leslie.
I really relate to what Gay said too. I think I talked in the work class before. I had this little refrain going on all the time. I need to get. And it was so powerful to notice that. But I wanted to share during my journey group this week, and we were talking about lust and greed. And I said, I just don't relate to greed. I feel like I'm just almost compulsively generous. And yet, as I was reflecting today, I realized, I'm a substitute teacher and I just love my job. I go to all the different grades and different schools. And I remembered going into a school and the different substitute assignments will be laying out on the office desk. And I know which one is me. I mean, I signed up for it, but I'm looking to see who has a better assignment. Like if I'm a teaching assistant today and they get to be in a classroom, and I resent that, and it's just so embarrassing. It was embarrassing to see it. And the email from today, and I know we'll get to it, but it talked about moving into gratitude, because I guess it's just this need to feel that affection and esteem. you know, false need, you know, that I want to be the best sub. It's just, it's silly, but it was really good to notice it.
Yeah. Leslie, thank you. It's good to be with you again like this. And I always enjoy the way that you work with delight. You can anchor those outside of yourself because they're just eyes, they're just energies that are passing through and are using a little bit of our time body experience, and then away they go. Yeah, beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Pam.
Hi, Donald.
Hello, Pam.
I was reflecting back to a couple of weeks ago on the emotional programs for happiness. And I've known for a long time that my primary one is affection and esteem. And so as I was observing greed this week, I saw the tie-in. And that is that I very much want to be my granddaughter's favorite grandparents. And I do a lot to make that happen. And I realize that it's very manipulative, and it's very much a part of that personality trait that I have. And as I continue to observe it, I realize that, you know, it's very greedy. It's wanting to take away from others what's rightfully theirs, for sure. But it's also taking away from my granddaughters. And it's not giving to them what I truly want them to have, which is freedom, freedom of choice, joy, happiness, diversity of experience. And so I've really continued to work with that this week and think about ways to back off and to be just more conscious of, you know, it's okay to do certain things, but be conscious of why I'm doing it and if it's really for them or if it's for me. So that's what I observed about greed, and it wasn't what I expected to see, but.
That's very clear. That was very, very clear. Thank you. Yeah, good experience. Way to go, Grandma.
Thanks. Mimi.
Lisa, thank you.
Am I unmuted now?
You are, yes. Thank you, okay. Lisa.
Good evening, everybody. I don't really have much to share, but I received such a gem from my journey group regarding this homework that I wanted to share it. And just in case nobody else had ever considered this, because it was a big aha for me. Somebody in the group mentioned that when they thought of greed, what came up for them was envy and comparison. And that was fascinating to me, because I have a strong eye that is wanting what other people have. And it could be a physical appearance, it could be a financial, it could be relational. It's like this comparing eye that wants more and more and more. And I never thought of my envy. I hear myself say, oh, I'm so envious, or oh, I wish. I don't do it as much currently, but to notice that that was a form of greed, and it keeps me from the gratitude of what I do have, and that arguing with reality. You know, it's like, well, no wonder I'm uncomfortable in my skin, and I have so much today. So it was just wonderful, a wonderful awareness. And I'm grateful for the journey groups that it's really shifted. You know, when I hear myself say, oh, I wish, mm-hmm. or just the envy is in terms of greed. Cause I too have not considered myself a greedy person And I used to think of it as just financial. I want more money. And boy, seeing it as envy, it was like, oh, well, that changes everything. Yeah. So I was grateful for that and just wanted to share it. Yeah, thank you, Donald.
That's a really good connection. So often when we put these eyes together, that I so seldom find that one exists by itself, that, you know, that it's got another connected energy with it. And
multiplistic, lots of layers.
Yeah, and sometimes I find myself actually going down kind of a rabbit hole of trying to parse them out rather than just saying, okay, you know what? I'm just going to go with envy or just go with greed. And just, you know, and whatever that energy is, I'm going to name it and go with it, even if it's not clinically correct, just like you did. Mm-hmm. I love how you did that. I found that very useful.
Yeah. Yeah. And I appreciate how we connected the physical gratitude prayer again, you know, because it was seeing the homework of the gratitude that reminded me, oh, what else could I do? You know, what's the truth is that, wow, I'm so grateful for what I have. And that was the centering, you know, bringing it back to the higher center within my body, you know, my moving center. So it was great.
Thank you, Lisa. Thank you for sharing. Duberly.
Hey, Donald.
Hello, Duberly.
Hi. I'm not sure what I want to say. I feel like I've been waiting for this email about on lust for a long time. It's been a struggle in my life for as long as I can remember. And I appreciate what you said about earlier about it being part of my, or this is the way I took it, part of my lineage, going back a while. And I feel I'm a little tired, honestly, trying to overcome this. But I'm also very hopeful, and I get a sense of urgency because I don't want to pass this on anymore. If that makes sense. I certainly don't think a week is enough to just to take this where I'd like to take it. So I don't know if it's appropriate, but if there are other men or women who struggle with this, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'd like to talk.
Yeah. Well, I'm really, really appreciative that you raised your hand and had the microphone here. Because it may be so, I don't know, I can only speak from my own experience. It's the only one I have. And guys, you know, what's that old saying that we have a lustful or a sex thought once a minute? Maybe I'm being too generous and it's once every 10 seconds. That wouldn't surprise me either. But it is part of our enculturation. There's no doubt about it, it is. And it's all around us. And I've done a lot of work with Tim over the years with this, and oh my goodness, we've had some really good laughs. And as the exercise came out, I was kind of feeling like you were, and it's like, wow, this is a really good one to revisit. And I'm glad I'm in the gray hair stage of my life where the libido isn't what it used to be. And this isn't the big work thing that was always there for me. And oh my goodness, Tim said it to me one time, and he says, well, just picture her that she's 85 years old and see what happens inside, because this is all mental stuff going on. Yeah. And that worked for a while. And I thought, you know, I've got to do something more than that. And one of the things that occurred to me is like, you know, you've got six sisters. Do you want other men objectifying your sisters? Now you've got a daughter. Now you've got a granddaughter. What do you want? Your lineage. And you know, you want it to stop here so that the sins of the father aren't passed down to the son. You're absolutely right with that. But we have been encultured in such a wrong way. that it's a big energy. And if we could repurpose that energy to our spiritual journey, wow, it's so powerful, so beautiful. So I appreciate you taking the microphone.
Yeah, thank you, Donald. I do wanted to add as part of that invitation. And for me personally, there's a there's force and community in a circle. I feel like I've been going at this alone in a way, you know. So anyways, yeah, thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for anchoring outside of yourself, Duberly. Well, with that, we're going to move on to the next segment of our evening, which is a delving into two different passions, pride and vanity. And one of the things that, in the references of the homework this week is a fabulous, fabulous commentary on pride and vanity. It's in book one, and I think it's page 357. It is so worth the read. It's very encapsulated. And one of the interesting things, it was almost like Nicol is writing about a class that is much like the journey groups and the journey school. And that this particular commentary, he's citing what students have said about their observations, and he's commenting on those observations. So you get to listen to or take in what some of the students were saying. You're like, oh my goodness, wow, we're like them, they're like us. And you can just feel the connection, the ongoing connection of the work that's being done and the commentary that Nicol is giving based on the feedback that he's received from his students. But the commentary starts out reminding us a few things, and that is that pride and vanity have to be studied in oneself by personal observation. We can read all the commentaries, we can read all the books on pride and vanity, but until we take it from an intellectual pursuit and move it from work on the side of knowledge into our being and put it to practice, then it is just really mind candy, and it is not anything that's going to be transformative for us. So personal observation. The second one is that everyone has their own forms in us, and they differ in different cases. So pride and vanity will look different in us, in each of us. And it will look different based on the impulses or the impressions that are coming in that that begin to give rise to it. And the final thing he starts out the commentary reminding us is that you must keep in mind that that pride and vanity, they seem quite reasonable, quite natural, to the point that we don't usually recognize them. So that's the starting point with it. And I'm going to bring up some slides now that that begin to break it out a little bit more. And there it is. Okay. So I'm going to start out with this first slide here. And these two giants, they're called pride and vanity. And the work says that they walk before us and they decide everything beforehand. And they may sometimes cooperate and sometimes be antagonistic with each other. And this is why it's difficult to define any particular action as being due exclusively to one or the other. And it's kind of like one of the conversations we just had, where it's often a combination of different eyes together that we're having experience of. And one may be a predominant, but there's an add-on energy to it. So in one case, it may be vanity that's particularly up for us, and pride is in there, but it is not the central, the primary energy, and that may be reversed. The next are, both are connected with self-love and can be quite different, so that one opposes the other. A compliment makes your vanity delighted, but makes your pride feel awkward. That is a good one. I had an experience at the church with One time I was walking with Tim down one of the walkways, and somebody in the church came up to me and gave me a compliment. And it was based on a particular work class. And what I did is I said, oh, thank you. And I gave it all up to God and said, well, you know, it's all God, isn't it? And I could see that there was kind of a befuddled look on that person. That was a moment of external considering where I could see myself in the eyes of the other person. And they just came up and wanted to give a simple compliment. And I couldn't hear the compliment. Why couldn't I hear that compliment? Well, first of all, as soon as that person left, Tim wasted no time at all of turning it right back on me and saying, you know, you really took away that person's opportunity to express something that was genuine from them. Did you see what you did? And I thought, no, I didn't. In that moment, I didn't. I thought, well, you know, give it all back to God. And there was more to it. So in the quiet times, I began to look at it. It's like, wow, what a great study of vanity and pride. My vanity was tickled with the compliment, especially in front of my teacher, but my pride wouldn't accept it. And so that was very, very useful. And ever since then, I've never forgotten that lesson. I appreciated so much the person that made that lesson possible for me and had to experience the moment that they had to in order for me to take that lesson in and learn something about genuinely accepting a compliment and recognizing the other person in that moment as well. And so let's see what else we have to. Vanity has a different internal taste from pride. You may be proud of a new car and vain when you're sitting in it. Then again, you may be even more proud of an old car and certainly not vain sitting in it. When I read that, I was reminded of some of the clothing that I would wear. Things that just weren't comfortable. I mean, it's like wearing a hair shirt, you know, things that were scratchy and just didn't fit me right. But you know, they had this little emblem on them, you know, that meant that they were a high ticket item. And so my pride would want to wear it, my vanity would want to wear it, even though there was another part of me that was not very proud of it because it was not really a very enjoyable garment. But vanity went ahead and arranged things accordingly. Here's another example. Vanity is usually connected with making an impression on other people. It needs an audience. Think of getting dressed up. And the example that I just gave is probably a good one that goes along with that too. Shortly, I'm going to take off screen sharing here and we can take a moment and you may have some anecdotal experiences of some of these that you might like to share, anchor outside of yourself, and we can all have a moment of delight with together. Both are often dependent on social image and expressions via possessions, publicity, titles, wealth, etc. Yeah, towards that, I can tell you that this work is very difficult for proud people and vain people, those that have a lot to work with. It can be very difficult. I've watched money walk away from the church. I've watched prestige walk away from the church. It all sounds really good until it starts becoming personal. And then you begin to recognize the situations of your life and all the places that you have work. And I've watched spouses take their spouse away from the work because of the same thing. Things just get too close with it. Pride and vanity go before us, making the way for us. Vanity may want to show off may want me to show off, to be important. And it may be pride that would prevent me from doing this. That's a good one. That's good use of pride. Pride can make you ashamed of not so knowing something, and vanity can make you pretend to know it. I really like that one. I look at all the times in my life where this poser I has come up, and whether it's around sports or whether it's around entertainment or just whatever it is, going along with the conversation, shaking my head like I knew something of what they were talking about and didn't have a damn clue. So it was the poser, the pretending, vanity making me pretend that I know it while pride knows it. No, I don't know it. It's usually vanity that causes self-justifying, an expression of the false personality defending itself. Pride can make us ashamed of self-justifying as well. Along that line, I had a really enjoyable moment in geometry class as a junior in high school. And in this geometry class, it was required that you not only get the right answer, of course, but you have to show your proof. And on a particular test, and geometry wasn't particularly easy for me, like most subjects, I was right on the borderline and didn't get a very good score on the test. And I was like, wait a minute, I've got the right answer here. So I went up to Mr. Epstein, and in such a way, in pride and vanity and also some desperation were at work. And I said to him, Mr. Epstein, I've got the right answer. Don't I get some credit? I mean, I really need that credit. And Mr. Epstein looks at me and he says, Mr. Janung, it's time to grow up. He says, if you build a bridge and the bridge eventually falls down, you don't get credit for building a good bridge. You don't get credit for this answer. And I was stunned by that response. And I walked away with pride and vanity assaulted, my tail between my legs. But it was such a great lesson, because in retrospect, I went back and I remember the time body energy of that moment. And it has always fed me about the expressions of pride and vanity and how in a moment, especially in a desperate moment, they can flare up and life turns around and reflects them right back at you. And you don't get credit, but you did learn the lesson. Let's go to just a couple more slides, and then we're going to have the opportunity to add some of our own expressions, examples that come to mind. The downside of pride is arrogance, personal superiority, and denial. This blocks growth to courage and beyond. And that reference to courage there and in moving beyond that is really in reference to that beautiful map of the scale of consciousness that was included in the email for the week. If you had a moment to study that, it is really worth going back over because we can see that pride is right below the level of transformation, just below the level of truth. It is the final large afflictive motion, if you will, that we need to surrender, to move beyond in order to move to beginning levels of truth. And courage is the first step beyond moving past pride. So there is very much courage involved in it. However, he's pointing out that arrogance is a downside of pride. And I certainly can reflect upon that too. I look at the times in my life where I've had a combination of two things together. Lisa, I was so glad you talked about greed and envy together, these marriages of different energies. Because for me, that was a combination of times when I'm under the influences, not only of arrogance, but ignorance. That is not knowing what I don't know and being arrogant that I don't know it. And when that is the case, there's no hope for transcending pride. And there is a personal superiority and denial that goes along with that. So that combination for me of ignorance and arrogance together that holds me back from transformation in a moment. And finally, when you ascribe some success to yourself, it goes to strengthen the false personality and so increase the vanity in you. When you ascribe some success to yourself. But the error occurs when the view is that it's me that is being rewarded rather than the behavior itself. And for us, of course, this sentence here makes so much sense because of our practice of self-remembering that we're going beyond the me. We're going into the mystery of what this is. So it's a really good closing point on some of the points that are made in the email and some additional points that are present for us in our study of pride and vanity. So we've got a few moments now before we go to another depth of this. If anyone has any examples of pride and vanity that you've enjoyed working with over time or recently, we've got a moment that you can share those if you'd like. Oh, good, Mark, thank you, because I didn't want to have to share more about me. I could keep going on with these all night. Thanks, Mark.
Well, I didn't have an example to share, but I was noting the slides and talked about both the inflationary aspect of pride and the deflationary shame, inward projected pride. And I'm wondering if it seems to me that they're connected strongly with shoulds. You know, one being, something should be done, I'm doing it, others are not. The other ones are, the shame is, you know, something should be done, they're doing it and I'm not. But yeah. Is that a fair connection?
Yeah. Yeah, especially the devolving, pride devolving into shame is a big one, absolutely. Yep, thank you, Mark. One of the things I've recognized, the ways that I kind of parse out vanity and pride within myself and try to make it quick so that I can continue to move on and use this the energy that's available that these passions have, is I look at and it's like, vanity is what I think others are thinking about me. And pride is more associated with what I'm thinking about myself. So I can find those, I can use those two as a litmus test. If I'm thinking about what other people are thinking about me, that's primarily a pride, excuse me, vanity experience for me. But what I'm experiencing in myself, that's pride. And I had this experience that I've talked about before when I was in kindergarten. And we had this number line across the front of the classroom. And this number line was a highway from 1 to 100. And everyone in the class had this paper cutout car and your name was on the car. And so you would stand up and you would count. And wherever you stopped down the highway is where your car was parked until the next time we did the lesson, which sometimes was a week apart. And so there was this big parking lot at 100, and there was just a few straggling cars that couldn't seem to get off the on-ramp and get highway speed up, and mine was one of them. And so it was always very painful to my vanity when I would stand up and my car wouldn't go very far and is still stuck on the highway. And then of course, because misery likes company, I began to have a good friend and somebody else's car was stuck on the highway as well. And once he got to the end of the highway and I was still in traffic, not much traffic, or I was still on the highway, I didn't have much of a friend anymore. So there were a lot of lessons that went with that. But when I did get to 100, I had such a vain, I felt like everybody would look at me. And nobody could really care. You know, it's that old saying, if we really knew what others were thinking about you, how disappointed we would be, because they're not thinking about you at all. They're thinking about themselves. Yeah. So at that time, I could look back and I can see how I just set pride or my vanity aside. But it was my pride, though, that I began to stick with. It's like, okay, well, nobody else seems to care, but I cared. And that shifted me from vanity to the experience of pride. In retrospect, I could feel it then. Thank you, Mark. Tracy.
Hello.
Hello, Tracy.
Hi. Sorry. Yes, and thank you, Mark, for getting your hand up just before me, because I just got to really burn through some pride that wanted to lower my hand in the meantime. But I don't have to look far for pride and vanity. It's every day. And I can observe that anytime I'm asleep, it's operating. Anytime I'm in internal considering, it's operating. Because as soon as I'm in internal considering, I'm the center of the universe and everybody else is other, and they're somehow two-dimensional, and my needs are more important. And so so I can just see that all just kind of fits together. And the specific thing I can get on the cross here and share as a little humor is this Zoom thing. So I'm on Zoom, pretty much all day I'm doing this. And, since we've been in this virtual world, what I've found is I tend to watch myself a lot, especially when I'm talking. And there is this kind of odd sense of self-satisfaction that comes with that. And I don't think of myself as being like body image oriented or pleased with how I look, or not even really displeased. It's not inflated or deflated, but there's just this sense of, I guess it's just, self-satisfaction is the best way I can describe it. It likes to hear Tracy explain something, or when she's talking about in Little W Work, something that she's knowledgeable about, it likes that, right? It kind of reinforces that, mm-hmm. that sense of self-worth that it needs, or validation that it needs. And so it's constant. It is constant. And I've thought to myself several times, I need to figure out how to turn off my picture in Zoom. Yet I haven't actually gone out there and really explored it. I've played with the little buttons on the screen, but I have not really done that. And I think there's good reason. It's kind of feeding on this negative energy loop.
Yeah. Oh, that's so good. Yeah. And that it hasn't happened yet. There's still opportunity there for the continued observation and delight in the play, the interplay with it, because I can tell you're not taking it too seriously. It's just like, okay, it's doing that. So let's continue to observe what's going on here with it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nice. Thanks for anchoring that outside yourself. And it was, by the way, it was well done too, Tracy.
Well, very good. Please. I feel a lot of self-satisfaction about that now.
Hello, Jeanette.
Hi, Donald. Well, I'm like Tracy. I thought, well, I'm going to go back and lower my hand again. I got to wait a little while on that. So I struggle with pride and vanity. There's a four on the Enneagram. Mm-hmm. I think my pride is that I'm so broken. I'm broken more than anybody else. That's the way it has been throughout the years. I have a difficult time taking compliments. And really, I always say, well, somebody else could have done that better, or, it's somebody else did that and it wasn't me. And Tim used to work with me on that. Mm-hmm. And he would give me compliments and I would deflect them, because I noticed how other people deflect compliments. He, as being number one, he always put it back to God. I mean, it was just the way it was. And But there was one time that I was in a session, and I said something, I don't remember what it was, and he paid me a compliment, and it fell on an authentic place. Mm. And I said, thank you. And he said, he jumped up actually and said, finally, finally.
Yeah.
So you got around your pride. And, you know, I don't know exactly what that was all about. I just know the feeling of it. And I remember the feeling of it.
Yeah.
That authentic place of just saying thank you. So I'm looking forward to working with this assignment for this week.
Yeah.
There's a lot of work to do.
Yeah. Thank you, Jeanette. Thank you for staying with it and working with delight. Deborah.
Hey, Donald, I wanted to share a story real quick that it's a little bit like yours. There was a Shakespeare festival every year where I lived, and I just decided I've never acted. I didn't know what I was doing. I showed up for the audition for the main stage play, just thinking that would be fun, you know, and I had just had a terrible breakup. I was bereft, heartbroken. I was young, kind of, you know, idealistic little hippie girl. And I show up and I try out for this play and I get the part of the lead of the female in The Winter's Tale at their main production. I had no idea what I was doing, had no idea how to act, didn't know anything about it. And it didn't take the director very long to figure it out. And the guy that was the lead was a very well-known Shakespearean actor. And he's like, oh my God, what have we done? And I told him, I didn't think I'd get this. And if you want me to step down, she said, no. So she sent me, I had no idea how to project my voice. And she sent me to this, one of the guys that was there that summer to coach us with our voice was a very famous New York Metropolitan opera star. So she sends me down, he said, bring something to sing. And he asked me if I sang, I said, yeah, I do. And so he said, bring a piece of music. I want to see what you do with your voice. And so I'm standing there in front of this guy, just absolutely humiliated, terrified, shaking, you know, all crunched over. And he starts to play and I squeak something out and he goes, no, come on. And I do the same thing. And his name was James. And he gave me one more shot. And then he picked up my music, threw it in the hall. He said, get out. He slams down the piano. And he walks me to the door and he says, when you want to do the work, come back and leave your pride and vanity at the door. And then he slams the door. And I was just, you know, in tears. And I get about halfway down the hallway. And I thought, I don't feel pride and I don't feel vain. I feel, you know, completely incompetent, right? But what he said about the work was, that's what's important. We have a play. You got the part. Show up. Suit up.
Yeah.
Leave your ego at the door. And I walked back and I said, I'm ready. And he was a wonderful coach. It was just a sensational turning point in my life in so many ways. But I didn't understand how vanity and pride show up in those ways. Just like you were talking about, of that, you know, reduction of ourself. It's the same thing as the exaltation of ourself. It's exactly the same thing. We are neither of those things. We are what we are, plain and simple. It was just such a gift. Anyways, thanks for letting me share. That was such a great memory.
Thank you, Deborah. Okay, I'm going to finish up with one more quick screen sharing here. And this is it here. What's useless and what's useful in connection with the work. Pride can digress into shame, what Mark was talking about. And a genuine pride can turn into real shame and humility, which is the movement to towards what is higher. And pride can become part of the will, but vanity cannot. Vanity is always wrong, except, as it were, in very small doses. Now, that is a very important statement here for me, because even in vanity, there's always a little bit of truth. There's a little bit of something that's useful to us, and the rest we can all release. And I think that's what this is expressing here. And pride is apt to walk in an opposite direction than the other giants. He's talking about fear, laziness, and our days become a battle between them. But pride often refuses to let one give in to laziness. And that was a big one for me. I sure appreciated that. And then the dualities of pride. This is in our email for the week and good to go through. And then finally, I'd just like to read this. This is from Transcending the Levels of Consciousness on the section on pride. And this is in our reference for the week. Humility is not just an attitude, but it is also a reality based on facts. With honesty, a devotee needs to realize the limitations inherent in just being a human. A person does not really know who or what we are, where we came from, or our destiny. And we're not aware, and we're unaware of the multitudes of karmic factors, both individual and collective. And finally, I of myself really know nothing. It's factual. For at best, the mind has impressions and presumptions. Life makes sense only in retrospect. Spiritual practices, accompanied by devotion, provide additional strength and enlist unseen support. Thus, faith and trust, plus willingness and intention, are time-honored guides. Thank you for everyone that shared tonight, and thank you for those that had your hand up that we didn't have time to get to. We all have the exercise, the homework exercise, in the email, so it should be a very interesting week as we continue to explore these passions. Blessings, everyone.
Thank you, Donald. Surely that was an exercise in working with delight, and everyone who shared. How wonderful. I look forward to this week's journey. So an exclamation point coming from Rodney Collin. We should be very careful not to be embarrassed, because it is vanity. It is imagination and habit. Most of our fears come from vanity. We fear that others will find us stupid, that they will understand much more than we do. We can understand anything if we are willing to study. Everyone has a mental picture of oneself. When we see ourselves in a photograph or a mirror, we say, "I am really better than that." We take ourselves very seriously. If we forgot ourselves a little, we would have some knowledge. Vanity is our enemy. Vanity does nothing for the thing itself, but for the effect it will have on others. When we cease to think of ourselves, of what impression we give, then we will be free. When we are thinking of other people, not of ourselves, the rest will take care of itself. We think that to forget ourselves means giving up something pleasant. We do not realize that to do so means entering into a new state of happiness. And so it is. And we close our night with a prayer that God's love has always met and will always meet all my needs. I give freely and receive joyfully. And how blessed I am to simply remember God. Protect us, Lord, as we are awake, and watch over us as we sleep. That awake we may keep watch with Christ, and asleep rest in Christ's peace.